Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com coming to you on the 12th of January 2012 here in Japan. And today I'm joined on the line from Florida by a multimedia journalist, Carlos Miller, available at carlosmiller.com, who has been running a campaign to raise awareness of the fact that photography is not a crime for a number of years now. So Carlos Miller, it's great to have you on the program today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, James. Thank you for having me.
Right. Well, it's my understanding that you have been arrested personally twice for attempting to take pictures of police officers, which is in fact not a crime, and that both of those convictions were overturned. But perhaps you can get into some of the details about this, because I'm not sure if I have the latest on all of this, and there may be more charges, but I also understand you've had some run-ins with the Miami-Dade Metro Rail security. So tell us about your experiences and what prompted you along the lines of investigating the fact that photography is not a crime.
Yeah, well, the whole thing started by accident in 2007. I was on assignment for a website taking pictures along a street in Miami, and I started taking pictures of these cops like I normally do, and it was part of the bigger story I was writing. I was writing about a block there that was going through all these renovations and big new businesses, and it was a high crime area, so, and it still is. So I took some pictures of some cops. I was expecting to move on, and then these cops told me I was not allowed to take their picture. They said, well, this is a private matter, keep moving. I said, this is a public street, I'm gonna continue taking your photos. One thing led to the other. They walked up to me, they escorted me across the street. And when I was across the street, I continued taking their photo, which is the photo you see in my blog. And that's when they arrested me. That's to make a long story short. And they took me to jail. I spent 16 hours in a county jail, and I was charged with 9 misdemeanors. And there are 5 cops, so they charged me with 5 counts of refusing a lawful order. They charged me with disorderly conduct, which they always do that. They always throw that in. They charged me with resisting arrest, obstructing traffic, and obstructing justice. Their whole claim on my arrest was that I was blocking traffic. And the picture, which is why I put that picture up on the blog, because you see the cars behind the cops. I was on the sidewalk, and that was it. So. But regardless of the evidence that I had, I started the blog, and regardless of everything that I tried to basically point the obvious, the prosecutors, the state attorney's office, insisted on going forward with the case. They're pretty upset that I had the blog, that I started the blog rather than just remain quiet about it. So that was the whole thing. I started the blog just basically to prove my innocence. And when that happened, they kept delaying the trial. I mean, I was supposed to go to trial in a couple of months, and I ended up going to trial more than a year later. And in the meanwhile, people were reading my blog, and they were saying, you know, this happened to me too. I mean, you know, here's my story. So I was, okay, I would write about their stories. And the whole goal in the beginning was just basically to justify my arrest. I would actually use their stories to try to prove a point, to say, yeah, you know what, this happens to these people. Because they were trying to paint me as a very unprofessional person, a troublemaker, someone who just deserved to be arrested. And my point was to prove, look, people are getting harassed all the time for taking pictures. So when I finally went to trial, I was convicted of resisting arrest, but I was acquitted of all the other charges. And the reason I was convicted of resisting arrest was because the judge allowed improper evidence into the trial, which is my blog. I didn't start the blog till 2 months after my arrest. But the prosecutor, who's actually the son of a cop, and the judge, who used to be the police union lawyer, is a very pro-cop, they introduced this evidence. They said, well, this proves that Carlos Miller hates cops, that he's anti-cop. Those are their words. And, you know, my attorney objected. He said, well, how can that prove anything if he started the blog after he was arrested? That doesn't prove anything on the night of the arrest. But they admitted that evidence, and the jury basically bought it. They said, well, this guy actually is a troublemaker, because they would bring up stories I had written in the year that I had the blog. Or, you know, I was criticizing cops in LA, criticizing cops in New York, other same things. And they were saying, well, this guy's obviously a cop hater, so he would get himself arrested. You know, and the whole crazy thing about that conviction was I was convicted of resisting arrest, but all the other charges were dropped, which means there was no underlying charge to base the resisting arrest charge. Which I still can't understand how that can happen, but in Florida, apparently it does happen. You can be arrested for resisting arrest and nothing else. So, which means they can walk up to you and place handcuffs on you, and if you resist, well, then you're resisting arrest. Although the law says you are allowed to resist in a non-violent way an unlawful arrest. because I've researched a lot when I did my appeal, because I did my own appeal, and I spent days and hours in the law library at the University of Miami, and I wrote my appeal, and I had it overturned. It took a while, but I had that conviction overturned. And in the meantime, I ended up getting arrested again. And what was bad about that was, because of my conviction, I was placed on probation for a year. So I was on probation, even though it was an unjust conviction, and even though I got it eventually overturned, while I was on probation, I was arrested a second time for the same thing, for taking pictures of cops on Miami Beach. I was working on an article for a local website, and I was arrested. And this time, they charged me with resisting arrest without violence, nothing else, because there's no crime in the books that says you are not allowed to take pictures of cops. There's no crime. So they couldn't think of anything, so they just threw out resisting arrest, thinking that I would just accept that. Well, I pleaded not guilty. The cop didn't show up to court, and that was an easy one. You know, the cop didn't show up to court twice, and they dropped that. So, and then after that, I had my conviction overturned, and they dismissed that case, too, rather than retry it. So I was cleared of all the charges, which is good. And during the meantime, my blog was getting very popular. I was writing about all these incidents happening around the country. And at this time, it was 2008, 2009. You know, the media really wasn't doing a whole lot addressing this issue. You know, they are now. They are kind of paying attention to people who are getting harassed for taking pictures. But back then, if you're not a journalist, then it doesn't matter. You can get harassed, and they didn't really care. And I was one of the people who kind of brought that to the light. And now they're kind of paying attention. And so now we have the issue with the Metrorail. As you mentioned, the Metrorail security guard. The Metrorail is our local transit system here, where the county is owned by the county, and the county policy states that we are allowed to take pictures on the Metrorail. It says, you know, you, as long as you're not doing it for commercial purposes. And commercial purposes means if you're shooting for an advertisement or something, you know, which I'm a journalist, I do editorial. You're not allowed to bring tripods and cables and all that kind of stuff. But as long as you're carrying a handheld camera, you are allowed to take pictures as a journalist or as a tourist or as someone just wanting to take pictures of their kids. But of course, as you see all the time, the people who are on the ground enforcing the law don't know the law. And this is what happened with the Metro. We got there, me and a buddy of mine who's a journalist as well, and they said you're not allowed to take pictures. You know, under federal law, under Homeland Security, we insisted we were allowed. They called the cops showed up, they didn't really know the law, more cops came, they didn't know the law. Homeland Security finally came, and they didn't know the law, but they really couldn't arrest us, and we just basically stood up for our rights. We had the paper in black and white that said we are allowed to take pictures. But, you know, these people are very stubborn, and no one wants to be shown the law, especially if you are paid to enforce the law. And we were, even though they released us, they detained us for 2 hours, and they released us. The head security guard at the Metrorail told me and my friend Stretch Ledford that we were banned, permanently banned from the Metrorail. And there was no due process in that. There was no reason to permanently ban us. And this is a Metrorail system that we've all paid our taxes into. I mean, this is our Metrorail system. I mean, it's not this guy who's running the security company, whatever he thought he was. So he thought I was just going to accept that. You know, he thought, okay, well, I'm banned. I'm never going to ride his Metrorail again. Well, no. We came back. Well, I came back a month later by myself with a news crew from Denver, HGNet TV. And they flew in from Denver just to do a story on me. And we went there, and I paid for a ticket. I walked into the Metrorail with a handheld camera and with their recording on the outside. And as soon as I walked in, I was assaulted by a security guard. Just came up to me, knocked the camera out of my hand, and took my camera. He put it in his pocket and tells me, leave, because I was shooting video, which we are allowed to do. And they still haven't gotten the message. So I pulled out my iPhone camera. I started recording him. I told him, well, give me back my camera. Give me back my camera. He goes, no. Give me back. He comes towards me. He's pushing me. He's kind of shoving me. I'm walking backwards, and I'm recording him. And he hits me again. He hits my hand again, and I threw a punch at him. That's when I got really ugly. I threw a punch at him. That's when the cops came, paramedics came for him, and I was almost going to jail for that, except the cops came. They looked at the video that the news crew was shooting. The news crew showed them what happened. They saw, I hit the guy in self-defense. He hit me twice. The first time I let it go, he took my camera. The second time I wasn't going to let it go. And now we have a lawsuit. Now I have a lawsuit against the Metrorail security company because they're just not trained. and they're enforcing unlawful laws, and they're doing it to a lot of people. You know, I mean, I'm not the first guy they harassed. I'm just the guy who made a big issue about it. But, you know, most people go on the train, they take out a camera, they're told they're not allowed, and most people are not aware. So they put their camera away, and then they contact me later. They go home, they get on the internet, they find my stories, and they contact me. Look, I've been harassed, you know. And it's an ongoing thing. And you walk on into that metro rail, you see the cameras, they're filming us, you know. And you know, the whole point is some people like to take pictures of trains. You know, you have these people around the country who are just, that's their hobby. They love trains, and they like taking pictures of trains. And you know, trains are pretty fascinating. But then you have these security guards who are saying, no, you must be a terrorist. You're going to take pictures of the trains and then blow them up or whatever, you know. But the truth is, there's no terrorist act in this country, or actually anywhere in the world, including the Madrid terrorist bombings, or the London subway incident, or 9/11, or Oklahoma, or any of them, where they had people taking pictures of these places before they actually did their acts of terrorism. There's not one single piece of evidence that shows that. So what they're doing, they're criminalizing a whole segment of the population, people who like to take pictures. You know, not just professionals, but people. We all have cameras these days. We all have pictures of cameras on our iPhones, and we have little point and shoots, and everyone wants to take a picture. And now we're being criminalized, and it's really stupid. It's not right, and that's my whole issue.
Well, absolutely, and it's an important issue to take up. And you mentioned that the media is picking up on this issue more and more in recent years, but still, it's a kind of a sad indictment of the Miami local news that that it took a team from Denver to fly out to document your deal with the Miami-Dade Metro Security. Were there no Miami local outlets that were interested in that story?
No, they were not. That's funny you mentioned that. No, they did not. Not a single one. They kind of, they knew about it, of course, but you know, the local media is always kind of, they're going through their own issues. They got their own, you know, big cutbacks. The Miami Herald, they lost a lot of reporters, a lot of photojournalists. And, you know, so they're just doing whatever they're doing. But no, I mean, that's the way it usually works out. It's like they don't want to write about the guy who's actually making an issue, or maybe something they should be making an issue about. So they ignore it completely. Although I think next week, today I was photographed by the Miami New Times, and next week there's a piece coming out on the most hated bloggers by government officials in Miami, and I'm one of those, so I'm proud of that.
It is a mark. I think it is a mark of the fact that you have done an effective job of making it difficult for police to commit those offenses. But just to be clear on the law and where it stands, there are different laws in different states that apply in different ways. But is there a law anywhere in the United States that would allow police to have the right to tell citizens that they are not allowed to film in public?
Well, in Illinois, you have a really strict law regarding the wiretapping, the audio recording. And you're not allowed to record police against their wishes if they don't provide consent. And we're actually, well, I say we, but the ACLU is trying to get that changed right now. There's a case pending, ACLU versus Alvarez. And any day, I mean, that's been going on for 4 months. So any day, I mean, tomorrow we might be able to hear the news. And I'm confident they are going to reverse that because that's the only state in the country where they make it unconstitutional, where the cops are allowed to record us. But we are not allowed to record them, even if we're very open about it, even if we show them, you know. And so it doesn't allow government to be transparent, which government should be transparent, and especially, you know, police in Chicago. But we're, you know, I mean, they have a pretty notorious history of corruption. And so they're going around and if they're committing acts of abuse, and they're beating somebody up, and a guy walks by and starts recording them, and they're not giving consent, which of course they're not going to give consent, they'll put that guy in jail and they'll charge him with a felony. And people can face up to 10, 15 years in prison for that act, which, you know, hasn't happened yet. But there's, you know, you people who are facing prison right now, they have that drama hanging over them. So you don't want that.
Certainly not. So Illinois is the only place where that pertains right now, and could be overturned any day. I certainly hope it will be. But let's speak to the broader issue of why do you
and
think?
So talk about Massachusetts, just so we can be very clear on the law. In Massachusetts, like most states, have, you know, there's either you have the right to record them without another person's consent, or you have to get people's consent. And Florida, you know, you need the other person's consent. But when you're lifting up your camera, and if that person there's a provision, what they call an expectation of privacy provision. So basically, if you're a cop out in the street or you're anybody in the middle of the street, you don't have an expectation of privacy. So I can record you without your consent because, you know, you're in public. And, you know, just like they're recording us as we walk in the streets anyway. In Massachusetts, though, you have to – it's the same expectation of privacy provision, but you can't be hiding the camera. You can't be secretly recording. You have to be open about it, which I always – tell people to be open about it anyway, just to let people know, because you shouldn't have to hide what you have the right to do anyway. But in any other state, in most states, you know, there's the expectation of privacy provision. And Illinois is right now the strictest state. Massachusetts, just to repeat, is just don't secretly record, because that is a crime as well.
So I think the answer to this question should be obvious, but let's put it out on the table. Why do you think police are so concerned about people taking pictures and photographs and film of them? And why do you think they have come down so hard consistently trying to arrest people for that?
Yeah, well, the answer is pretty obvious. I mean, cops for decades are used to creating their own truth. You know, they arrest somebody when they arrested me. You know, they arrested me for taking pictures. That was obvious. Well, they couldn't really write that in an arrest report. So they said, well, he was standing in the middle of the street. He was blocking traffic. He was creating a big disturbance. And these are five cops, you know, and if it wasn't for any photography, any cameras, well, you know, who's the judge going to believe? Who's the jury going to believe? They're not going to believe me or five cops. They're going to believe the cops. They come in there with their uniforms, and people, most juries have a tendency to believe the cops. Even now with video, it actually shows what really happened. So it forces the cops to be honest, and a lot of cops are used to stretching the truth just to make the charges stick, you know, to their agenda. And that really hinders what sometimes what they want to do. Because sometimes, you know, you have a lot of cops who arrest people on unlawful charges, and they make it up just because they don't like your attitude. We call it contempt of cop. You know, if you back talk to a cop, or if you question a cop, or if you ask his badge number, for example, if you ask his name, and you want, because, you know, cops want to be respected, and so do we. And I always tell people to respect cops, but, you know, you don't necessarily have to kiss their butt. You know, you don't have to, you have the right to question why they're pulling you over. You have that right as citizens. We're not living in a police state yet, but a lot of times they will arrest you for asking their names and badge number. So that's the reason. I mean, they don't want to be recorded because it just shows the truth. And they have nothing to hide, because there's a lot of cops who don't have anything to hide. And you'll see a lot of cops who just tell you, you know, just stay out of my way. Don't interfere with my investigation. Just stay across the street, record all you want, and that's it. And usually those cops are doing their job, and that video is not really interesting because they're doing their job. And that's the way it should be. And I would wish that we can just record cops and have a bunch of boring videos that no one cares about because they're not doing anything. But what you have now is you start recording a cop, they get in your face, they start threatening you, and then they make themselves look really stupid. They send me the video, I put it up on my blog, and it just goes viral, and then the cop gets mad. Well, he is the one that made himself look stupid. And that, we see that every day, almost.
Unfortunately so. But what do you think the advent of technologies like digital camera and the internet that enables blogs like your own, how has that shaped the discourse, and how is the rise of citizen journalism changing perhaps the perception of this problem in the United States?
Well, you know, it came around at a time when I used to work for a newspaper. I used to work for the corporate media. I spent a lot of years working for the corporate media. And what happened was the corporate media got so conglomerated, you know, you ended up with like six big news companies owning all the news companies in the country, where even just 10 years earlier, you had competition. You had the afternoon papers, you had family-owned newspapers. So there was this drive to be competitive with your rival newspaper, which actually forced the reporters to want to tell the truth. And reporters, for the most part, still want to tell the truth. But now the editors are like, well, you know, you don't have to do that story. Because why? Because we already bought out, when I worked at the Arizona Republic, they bought out all the local papers. You know, we don't have any competition anymore. We just write whatever we want, when we want it. You know, we bought out, they got the news stations. You know, so you have companies running the radio stations, the TV stations, the newspapers. So they're not really writing the news. They're not covering City Hall. They're not covering law enforcement the way it should cover, you know, be covered. They're just basically writing fluff pieces, little, you know. And so people have lost interest in the media, in the mainstream media. People lost trust. And at the same time, you had this rise of the internet for the first time in history. we have true freedom of the press. You know, we've always had freedom of the press on paper. But if you don't own the press, you really don't have freedom of the press. But if suddenly, you know, we have the internet, and suddenly everybody with a computer who has access to the computer, you can go to your library and create your own blog. You go, you have created a YouTube account, you have a little video camera, you have Facebook, you have Twitter, and you have all these mediums where you can get your story out there. And suddenly we have true freedom of the press, and that bothers a lot of people. That bothers a lot of government officials. But it's a natural reaction, because it's very coincidental that happened when all these corporations are taking over the media, where you weren't really seeing the truth. They were just not covering it. So it really balanced things out, and we need it. And we're still going through a transition in the media. And it's very interesting how this is going to turn out, because nobody really knows. But it's just, personally, I'm fortunate where I was able to establish my blog. And, you know, like I told you before, my plan was just to get my innocence out there. But I got to the point where I created a brand, my own brand, my own name out there, where I don't have to work for the corporate media. And even though now my blog is being hosted by Barnes & Noble and they do pay me, you know, I still own my blog. And if it doesn't work out, I can take my blog and leave, and I'll take my readers with me, which is different. Like when I worked at the Arizona Republic, if I left the Arizona Republic, I leave and they keep the readers, because the readers are going to stick with the Arizona Republic. But nowadays, my readers will go with Photographers on a Crime. And that's a very, very powerful thing, which we really didn't see 10 or 15 years ago. And there's a lot of journalists who are just leaving the mainstream media, and they're trying to establish themselves, trying to establish their niche. It's really, nowadays, it's all about establishing your niche. And it's not easy, but if you can do it, you can do it. And it's a very fascinating time. I mean, there's like the golden age of new media. That's how I look at it. And we're still figuring it out.
I couldn't agree more. It's still very much in flux, but absolutely, there's so many positive things that could come out of this. So based on your experience, what advice would you give to someone who finds themselves in the situation of being accosted or perhaps even arrested by police for trying to photograph something that's taking place in public?
Well, what I learned, like the two times I've been arrested, I was just taking still photos. And I just got into a video a few years ago because of that. I started realizing, well, you know, I have all people, they arrest me, and I really have to go to trial. I have to like prove my innocence. And even though in the first arrest, I had a picture that proved the street was behind the officers, they actually used that photo as evidence. I said, look, he was standing in the middle of the street and the cars are right behind him. And it's really weird. So I learned that he's all about video, and I carry around a little flip camera wherever I go. I mean, I got into video. I have like three cameras on me, three small portable flip, well, one flip, a Kodak, and my iPhone, as well as my still cameras. I just bought another video camera. And I recommend just carrying that camera wherever you go. If you start getting harassed, pull out that camera and start recording. Don't hide it. You know, just pull it out and ask the officer to remain professional. Say, okay, sir, what law am I breaking? And can you please explain what law am I breaking? Because, you know, photography is not a crime. Get yourself familiar with the laws. Get yourself familiar with the local policies. If you're photographing on a train, get yourself familiar with the train's policy, because they all have, you can usually find out on the internet. And for the most part, photography is legal on train systems, although they're always going to tell you no. You know, get yourself familiar. You know, I've had the incident with TSA last month, where TSA states on our website that we are allowed to record their checkpoints. But I have not met a single TSA screener who's aware of that. You know, because I walk in there and I just do it to test their knowledge, and they start threatening me with throwing me in jail, and they're saying I'm a terrorist and I'm going to miss my flight and all this. And it's like, read your own policies on your own website. It's been up there for 2 years. So, you know, carry a video camera and familiarize yourself with the policies and the laws. And even in the last instance, I should have had a printout with me. That was my bad, because when I was rushing out of my home to catch my flight, I left it sitting in my printer. And I would think, well, maybe these guys would actually know the law, but they don't. They don't know the law. These people who are paid to enforce these laws, and they have a very powerful position, because they can screw up your life. You know, they can pull you aside. They can make you miss your flight. They can put you on a terrorist watch list. They can really mess up your life. And for what? And when you're not even breaking the law. So it's always good to prepare yourself and have the copies of the law with you and know the laws, and just remain professional, because if you are videotaping, you don't want to come across like very unprofessional. You leave that to them. If they remain, if they start being unprofessional, well, they're the ones who are going to look bad, and they do. And you don't want to look like that, because then when it comes out on YouTube, then people are going to say, well, you know, you kind of egged them on. You kind of, you know, maybe even though you were, I mean, it's not against the law to be obnoxious or unprofessional. It'll always help your case if you just remain calm. And it's not always the easiest thing to do, I admit, because you get nervous when you're doing these things. You know, you have these people who have guns, they have handcuffs, they got power, they got badges, they surround you, and you know, they'll arrest you, you know, and you might be able to beat the rap, but you're not going to beat the ride. And that can be very scary, because, you know, when you spend a night in jail, in Dade County Jail or any jail, it's not a pretty experience, you know, and you just, it screws up your whole night, and there's a lot of sacrifice to do. But for me, I think it's worth it, because it is a very important issue, because once they convince the whole population that we're not allowed to record them, that then where we're at as a democracy, then we just have to accept that they can record us, but we can't record them. And we lose a lot, because they're not very efficient, these people running this system.
And absolutely. Well, let me just say that first of all, I salute you for the work that you've been doing, doing this to not only inform others, but to also inform the police themselves that it's in fact not a crime. Because as always, you have to know your rights and assert your rights in order not to lose those rights or have them taken away by default, basically. So absolutely important for other people to get involved in this as well, because there's always power in numbers. So as we've been talking about, your Photography is Not a Crime blog is available through carlosmiller.com. What if people are interested in your multimedia journalism itself? Do you have a website for that?
You know, I do, but I haven't really updated it. It's magiccitymedia.com. But I also write for a local website called miamibeach411.com. I'm a senior editor there, and that's more my local, you know, it's me and a couple of other writers, and we have a very good website. It's a travel website, but we cover anything related to Miami, and Miami's a very, very interesting city. So there's always a lot going on. So I'd recommend people to check out Miami Beach 411, and we also do tours as well. We do, that's how we get funded. We have a tour company. We take you through the Everglades or boat tours. So you guys, I mean, anyone comes to Miami, I mean, let me know, and we can hook you up with a tour.
Well, if I ever come to Miami, I will certainly take a look. So thank you very much for your time. And thank you again for all the work that you're doing. Photography is Not a Crime, carlosmiller.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, James. Thanks for having me on.